Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Higher, 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 higher
lower, 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 lower. Stomp Satan lower. Do 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 higher, 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 lift Jesus higher. Lower, 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 stomp Satan lower. Higher, 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 lift Jesus higher. Lower, 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 lower around for Jay, but no Jay. So maybe I could conference him in.
Hello? Hello? Hello there? Bart? Hello? Hello?
Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, where are you at?
Hey, Jay. You got me.
Oh.
All right. I called in to talk to you.
Hmm?
And just for the hell of it, started recording, and I was just fucking around a while, singing to myself, waiting
yeah.
for you, and finally I disconnected, and then I called back in, and here you are.
Yeah, well, I was having this weird thing where when I would call up the TalkShoe phone number in my phone, and I would hit dial, and it would dial Daylin's number. I don't know what the fuck was. This phone is so fucked up. It just
wow, maybe
Daylin
is really taking over TalkShoe.
Yeah, so finally I figured out how to do a technological workaround, as they say in the smartphone business.
Wow. So
yeah.
I gather from some of the textery that we were exchanging earlier that you were having a bit of a trouble putting the old rascal down.
Well, you know, I was. Actually, it wasn't so much trouble as it was Day was having her book club here at the house.
Ooh,
and
cool.
One of the things that we've learned quite a while ago is that if she is in the house and he knows this, there's no way that I'm putting him to bed. And so I ended up basically having to wait until she was done with the book club. And I just fed him cheese and carrots.
So she's got a book club. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know what book they were discussing?
They were discussing it's a rather strange title. It's like a visitor's guide to Portland. I know that sounds like a strange thing to have at a book club. I think it was sort of, but it was a book that one of their members is moving to Portland soon, And this was a book that was actually written by a novelist who had written one of the books that they have had in the book club before.
Yeah,
so
yes.
It was the person who was moving, it was her turn to suggest a book.
Yeah,
and
right.
So she kind of went with the self-serving choice.
That is fantastic. So
yeah.
Do they actually read these books and talk about them, or do they just get drunk?
A little bit of both, I think. I didn't hear any discussion of the book, but then I came in a little bit late.
It usually depends. You can usually take a guess with any given book club based on the time of day that they meet.
Ah, yes. Exactly. I imagine that's true.
Anyhow,
so what time of day does your science fiction book club meet?
Early in the morning, so you know that we're drinking hardcore.
Yeah, yeah. Are we recording this, by the way?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is
okay.
All on the record.
Oh, shit.
All on the record. So anything you say here will come back to haunt you, I guarantee.
Yeah, I take
now,
it all
I
back.
I was hoping that we would get old Jenny Beasley in on the
yeah.
call.
Yeah, I remember
but
her.
That doesn't seem to be happening, so we're just going to have to figure that out later.
Yeah.
For a future thing. Although I do
exactly.
have to tell you, Jay, when we started doing this podcasting, I thought that we would get to 26 episodes and then call that a season.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Just 26 seems like the standard number for a season.
Yeah.
Well, this is our 26th episode.
Well, exactly. Or yay, or something.
Or something.
That's good news.
Of course, you haven't been there for all of them.
Yeah, I haven't. And, you know, these days, of course, a season in some television series is a lot shorter or a lot longer. That kind of 26-episode season thing that used to be so standard in network television seems to have just completely fallen by the wayside.
So how do you want to do things?
Well, I think that we should celebrate every time with a mixed drink. I'm having
one. Yeah. Yeah, I'm having some rum and Coke. I had to drink Coke in order to stay up because it's so freaking late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Here in Montana, it's still actually kind of light out.
Yeah.
Even though it's whatever time it is, 10-something.
Right, right.
Yeah.
11-something here.
Yeah.
Just before, I was so bored, I actually turned on the television while I was
mm-hmm.
waiting to talk to you. And there was some show, Louisiana Today, where these two fat old fucks are sitting around. They look like mafia dons. And
uh-huh.
they're talking about, you know, Louisiana politics. What do you think? A
yeah.
white guy can get elected to the mayor of New Orleans, given the current situation? It was really
wow.
quite bizarre.
Yeah. Did they have anything interesting or intelligent to say?
I just quoted you verbatim. What do you want?
Oh, well,
more do you want?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that
doesn't
pretty
that
much sums
it
up.
Yeah, it pretty much sums it up. So, anyway, I have been thinking lately kind of about, I just feel like in a lot of ways I am a bad friend.
Uh-oh.
To a lot of my friends. Not to you, of course.
Of course.
But to everybody else.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I was just thinking about the fact that I don't seem to put a lot into the friendships that I have. I kind of just take people as they come,
mm-hmm.
and if they put in the effort, if they get in touch with me, whatever, you know, then we'll hang out. But it's kind of they've got to do the work, and I don't do much work in that regard. In fact, so the reason that you're an exception to that, Jay,
mm-hmm.
is you are quite literally the only person I feel like I have to run after in order to maintain some kind of
friendship. Yeah.
Friendship, exactly. In this podcasting, for example, pinning you down
yeah.
to actually have a conversation takes a little bit of an effort. Not a Herculean effort, but it takes a little
yeah.
bit of an effort. And I make that effort.
because of some kind of crazy, probably misplaced sense of value.
Priority.
Yeah. But anyway, be that as it may, I mean, oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was startled by a cat.
Oh, gosh.
Up in my face. Yeah. All right. So,
is this a cat you know?
Yeah, it's Crybaby.
Okay.
I'm fixing myself a drink right here at the window over our wet bar.
Oh,
and,
gotcha.
And the cat jumped up on the sill and scared the bejesus out of me.
Mm. Well.
And you know that's not a pleasant thing.
Yeah.
But so what I'm saying is, for some reason, I do make that effort with you and really only recently. But everybody else is kind of shit out of luck as far as it comes to being a friend with me. And I think that probably kind of sucks.
Well, you know, maybe those other people should play hard to get because it seems to work for me.
Yeah, if they did, though, Jay, I mean, you and I have quite a history. I don't really have the same history with most of my other friends. I mean, even people I know have known for longer than you. We haven't quite done as much together as you and I have.
Right. Yeah.
I've got friends that I know from third grade or whatever, but we haven't done as much together. We haven't.
Yeah, I imagine you all didn't, like, trip on acid together in third grade.
No, no, but, I mean, we might have later, but that's really, tripping on acid is nothing. You and I have combined forces and created a media empire.
Right, exactly.
Of course.
That's what we did. Well, you know, it's strange and interesting how those things develop, because I find myself, you know, I find myself in my conversations with you always trying to explain why it is that it's so challenging for us to get together on the phone or whatnot. And then I turn around and just get so irritated with my own brother, Alan, because, you know, there was a time when he told me that if I wanted to communicate with him, I needed to do instant messaging. He didn't do email. And he proved this by never answering an email that I ever sent to him. You know, so instant messaging doesn't really work in my work environment. So, you know, I have tried, we play World of Warcraft together online, which seems to be a pretty good way to keep in touch, except that I haven't seen him in there as much as I used to now. And text messaging, you know, he once told me that he would, you know, anything that had to do with the game or whatever, you know, if I just needed to get in touch with him about scheduling to get together, text him. And I do this, and he never replies to my texts. And so I feel your pain. I guess all I can say is that what I have realized pretty acutely in the last several years, but I've come to recognize it most acutely this year, is that I have worked myself into a career and a work environment that is incredibly high pressure and high stress. You know, the daily newspaper business is not known for being a very relaxed environment.
No.
And then, you know, just all the – and then I kind of compound that. And I know that I do this to myself. I mean, it's my own damn fault. But, you know, right now I'm helping run this opera company that we open Rigoletto, our first really major production, a week from this coming Thursday. And – we are way short of our fundraising goal, actually way short of our financial commitments at this point.
Oh.
You know, we're talking five figures short. And, you know, I'm doing a lot of I'm the head of the marketing committee, so I'm doing a lot of stuff on that. And there's just, you know, it has been really exhilarating in ways, but it's been a shit ton of work. And
yeah, I imagine so.
I don't know if the irony is that when I was asked to be on the board of this company a year and a half ago, I distinctly remember, you know, having this internal conversation about whether I had time to fit anything into my schedule. And at the time I was thinking, you know, God, could I fit in, like, coming to meetings every few weeks you know, a little bit of work here and there? Well, it's been daily work for the past month. And I have to fit it in at night. And, it's pretty intense. So all that to say that it's my own damn fault. I chose this career. I chose this opera company to get involved in. And yet, it's just ridiculous. See you, Nancy. We still have guests. So it's not valid excuses necessarily for why it is that I'm so scattered and always have something going on. It's frustrating.
No, not at all. I mean, yes, it is frustrating for you. For you, it's frustrating. But for the rest
of for my friends, too.
Oh, you know, trying to get in touch with you. Yeah, you're right.
Well, and, you know, I don't mean to even sound flip or like I'm excusing myself. I mean, here's the thing. It was a lot longer than that ago. About 5 years ago, we decided to subdivide our property and build this house next door,
right.
which we now
and move
live
into
in.
The house and rent out the old one, right?
Right, at the time, although we ended up selling it, selling the old one. When we were trying to sort of sketch out a program, if you will, for the new house, one of the really top three things, I think, of that program was to have a place that was comfortable to entertain guests, because we pretty much lived a lifestyle where we had friends coming over pretty much every night, and we enjoyed that, and we also wanted to be able to host parties because we had a lot of big parties next door.
Yeah.
And to be perfectly honest about it, by the time we got through that incredibly stressful multi-year construction, permitting, etc., rezoning process, our parties these days are much smaller. And I honestly attribute this to the fact that I became so busy during that time period that I lost touch with a lot of the people that I considered even very close friends.
Huh.
So.
Well, yeah, don't know what to make of it. You have always struck me as a very social person.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always struck myself as a not very social person.
Mm-hmm.
There you have it, in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, I don't know. And yet, you're the one who has to do all the work to keep us keeping in touch.
Yeah, but I'm just saying you're the exception.
Yeah, yeah.
In my other friendships, I mean, I had a friend call me out on this a couple of years ago. By forcing the other person to always be, you know, taking an active role in maintaining the friendship,
mm-hmm.
that other person then is forced to kind of feel like they're emotionally needy. Or something, and that they're just leaning on you, you know,
yeah.
and on me, well, my pronouns are getting confused, but I think you understand what I'm driving at. And it's fortunately, of course, with you and me, I have a strong enough sense of self of myself that I don't feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to maintain some kind of semblance of communication with you, despite your busyness. I don't feel like, oh yeah, I'm a loser.
He's yeah.
Cool. He's so cool over there in Montana. I can understand how people would feel that way, and how my friend in this case that I'm telling you about did feel that way. He basically told me, you know, he didn't want to have anything more to do with me because I suck as a friend. And
wow.
And he just kind of assumed that I must hold him in some kind of really big form of contempt. And, you know, so we got together and had a heart-to-heart, and I was like, no, not at all. In fact, you know, I like you a lot. I think you're really a very cool person. And, and just, that, you know, basically that I valued knowing him. And and I did want to maintain that friendship. It's just that you know, I don't know. I'm just not a very social person. I pretty much... I enjoy talking to people to some extent, but I also have found over the years that I enjoy my own company a great deal. And so, you know, my emotional needs for being with people and having that camaraderie or whatever are kind of low.
Yeah,
compared to other people, I guess, and so that's a stumbling block.
Well, it's understandable, and it's even laudable in many ways. I mean, I think that actually one of the things that people are generally attracted to you for is your comfort with yourself and your the way you seem to live a well-examined life. You know, I think that a lot of people who are constantly out being social and who have a very active social life, and I'm, who knows, I may be guilty of this as much as anybody, are sort of keeping the din and racket of life at a high pitch so that they don't hear the gnawing voices inside. And so in that sense, you know, the fact that you are comfortable, I mean, it's actually a pretty rare thing, I think, that to know someone who is not crazy, but yet who is perfectly comfortable with their own company.
Yeah, it's funny. Do you guys practice any kind of contemplative practices there in Missoula?
Well, you know, we just shoot things. No, I'm kidding. You know, there was a long time period where I would have said that I was a very active and devoted practitioner of yoga, and you know, was doing it with great regularity, and it was very clearly very good for me. When Julian was born, that sort of broke that rhythm, and I've never quite gotten back to it. And I'd say, actually, the longest real gap there is the current one. It's been, at this point, 2 or 3 months since I even went down in the basement and rolled out a yoga mat. So that's unfortunate, because it was very good for me in many ways, not the least of which was that it finally ended this thing that has been going on since my late 20s, where periodically, once every couple of months, I'll just, you know, tweak my neck in a certain way and have crushing headaches that I can't, you know, even suppress with drugs that will last for days.
Oh, man, I hate that.
Yeah. So I'm a big proponent, I guess, of yoga at this point, but not a very active practitioner. I went to church today, which was something that I've rarely done in my adult life. My mom is here in town, staying here for about half the summer, and she has found a church that she likes, and Dylan was in a class today, and so I went to church with my mom at the church that she likes, and it was enjoyable. It was actually interesting. I don't know, maybe here's my sign or something, I don't know, but the whole conversation, mom seems to like to go to churches where, maybe this is, every church says this probably, I don't know. Because I only go to the churches she goes to.
Oh, no, I'll set you straight. You tell me, and I'll let you know.
Okay. Well, so they seem to have sort of a, they had sort of a theme today that was reflected in both the very, very brief scripture reading, but then also in the lecture, or whatever they call it, the sermon, in some of the other stuff going on, basically, and like in the cover of the program, about slowing down and smelling the proverbial roses.
So you're wondering whether every church has thematic programs?
Yeah. I mean, I always hear people talk as if going to church is just all about like being pounded over the head with the rules of scripture and that kind of thing. And when I, you know, it's actually unfair of me to even have made the verbal gaffe of calling it a lecture, because it didn't feel like a lecture. It felt like more like a one-person discussion of the issue. And I can appreciate that. And it was...
Sure.
And it was actually interesting, you know, it was not anything that I hadn't necessarily thought of before, but it was stuff that I have, that is important for me to be reminded of at this point, this issue of slowing down and not letting the events of life take over.
Oh, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. But just to... as an aside, to address your kind of implicit question of whether or not every church does that, no, they don't all have thematic programs every Sunday. In fact, some churches are just kind of flying by the seat of their pants. And, you know, sing a few songs. There's no printed bulletin of any kind, and the preacher will get up and talk at some point, however the spirit moves him, and and so forth. So quite different in terms of the overall experience. And I would also hasten to add, the last time, for example, that I was in a church, it was a Catholic church, and right here in Louisiana, in suburban New Orleans. And the priest was out that day. I think he was being booked on some child molestation charge. And so one of the elders or deacons, I think they call them, or anyway, whatever the correct title is, he gave the homily instead.
Uh-huh.
And the main point that he made was George W. Bush is the only candidate that you can consider voting for because of the abortion issue.
Holy shit. Wow.
Yeah. That was the main import.
Yeah.
And but
isn't wait a second though, I'm a little bit confused because isn't homily that stuff that it's kinda like a large white corn, kind of a
no,
southern dish.
Jay, you're thinking of hominy, of course.
Oh.
And I would hasten again to remind you that just as you called the sermon a lecture before, in
mm-hmm.
the Catholic Church they call them homilies.
Ah. Yeah.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah. Hominy, hominy, let's all eat some hominy.
This is some real Abbott and Costello stuff here.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is that in that church situation, I didn't feel like it was a, you know, hey, let's kick back and take a moment to think about something together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that's kind of cool, to be a kind of cool message for you, no matter what, you know, let's not get bogged down in doctrinal issues.
Mm-hmm.
So forth. No, it was very much all about the doctrine and the dogma. Yeah, absolutely. And so there's a great variety from church to church, from denomination to denomination. One objection I have to many churches, especially these kind of churches that have more of an emphasis on doctrine, is that there's no provision whatsoever for the skeptic or the, dare I say it, non-believer,
right,
who might happen to set foot inside that arena. There's
mm-hmm.
there's no gallery for spectators in these things. It's like, you know, stand up, sit down, sing this hymn, recite this creed, you know, make a
yeah.
blood oath that you believe in this now because we're all doing it.
Yeah.
And I find that's horrible. You know, you shouldn't participate in such rites if you're not doing it sincerely. And
sure.
So my feeling is they don't want me there. Fine. I will keep away.
Yeah. Well, I know for a fact that not all churches are that way.
I know, absolutely.
And, you know, this one that I went to this morning seemed quite open and that kind of thing. But at the same time, it's funny that you say that stand up, sit down, follow along kind of thing, because I did have a sense of that in a fairly negative way. Actually, what I found myself thinking was that this particular Sunday wouldn't have been a great one. Dylan was, as I said, in class, and it wouldn't have necessarily been a good one for her to come to, because I know that she feels has very strong feelings against churches that sort of force things on people. And they had a baptism of a 2-year-old there, and just the sort of, you know, they were trying as they. I think that their effort was in the right place as far as not trying to make it seem like something that was being forced or whatnot. But, you know, this whole thing about sort of all these people gathering around and making a big deal about baptizing a 2-year-old, I mean, you know, there's certainly no free will in that. This 2-year-old has no opportunity to say, you know, but wait, I've got some questions here.
Right, but
you know, and I'm sure that
was the 2-year-old asked? Conversely, was the 2-year-old asked to affirm anything?
No. But the entire congregation was. You know, we were basically all saying, you know, I will, and we do, and this and that. Yeah, so.
And don't we believe that truth and honesty are virtues?
Yeah.
Yeah, so one should not affirm anything that one does not believe.
Sure. Exactly.
So that's where we get into some tricky territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This didn't happen to be a primitive Baptist church, did it?
No, no. This is actually United Church of Christ. You know, it's a very open-minded, accepting church. They explicitly state in their mission, I believe, that that you know, gays and lesbians and whoever is perfectly welcome in those congregations. It's a it's about the closest thing to a the kind of church that I could get into, except that, you know, I just don't, all this stuff about, you know, the scripture reading was the one about Jesus feeding a gazillion people with one fish, and and then he parks his boat someplace and all these people pile their sick people on him, and he touches them, and or they touch him or something, and they're suddenly well. And, you know, I just, that's hocus pocus to me. That that makes me want to say, you know what, this is all bullshit.
That's holy scripture, Jay. That's holy
what's
scripture.
That's yeah, holy I know, and there's the problem. See, you know, I love the principles that are sort of behind a lot of this stuff, but I just don't fall for that stuff because, you know.
Well, perhaps you might need to take a literal reading of that scripture.
Yeah, I know.
We could think
about
what it means that Jesus fed the multitude on the little bit of food, or we could say, hey, what about the Unitarians? Have you ever gotten down with them?
Briefly, when I was in Georgia, living with my mom a few years ago.
As they say, the only time that you hear Jesus Christ mentioned at a Unitarian church is when the pastor stubs his toe on the front steps.
Well, you know, that may be the case, and I would be okay with that. You know, it's funny, actually, when I moved to Missoula 12 years ago or so, this is so fucking lame as far as a reason to make a decision about spiritual matters. But I looked up the Unitarian Church first off when I moved to town, found out where it was, and on, I don't know if it was the very first Sunday I was here, but one of the very first Sundays I was in Missoula, I rode my bicycle down there and, you know, hadn't seen the building, didn't know anything about it.
Right.
And I got there, and I was about 15 minutes late for their posted, you know, time of their congregational whatever gathering on Sunday. It looked like a private residence. I mean, it was well marked. I was clearly at the right place, but it was this little tiny place. And I realized that, you know, it's not like I'm sneaking into the back row of this, you know, 300 person.
Your entry will be noted, and you will be directly in the eye, and they'll recognize your face. And
exactly.
When they see you at the grocery store. Right, exactly. So you turned away and did not set foot.
I never went back again. These are how, this is how devoted I've been as a churchgoer in my life. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Christy and I went to one of the Unitarian meetings here a while back, and you know, I just wanted to kind of get familiar with the congregation and the whole process. Just I just thought, hey, you know, someday we might have a child, and I would want that child to at least have some familiarity and maybe some of the community, you know, that goes along with religious communities. And anyway, so we went to a church, and you know, it was a very nice ceremony and so forth, and there was very, very little that I found you know, raising these difficult questions of, oh my God, if by being here, am I endorsing something that I don't believe in? Am I being a hypocrite? Am I lying? You know, am I engaging in some kind of what do you call it, prevarication?
Sure.
Just by standing up and reciting these words, there was very little, really nothing like that. And so that was great, right?
Yeah.
But I also didn't feel that it was really speaking to a deep-seated need that I had. I mean, you know, in the Unitarian Church, there's definitely a lot of concern with social justice issues, which I think is fantastic. That turns my crank for sure. But anyway, I just didn't feel like, you know what, this is what's missing. I need to be coming here every week.
Yeah.
So there you have it. I'm very intrigued and interested by the kind of revival of interest in goddess worship, kind of the neo-pagan, the whole kind of neo-pagan. There's many, many aspects to this whole neo-pagan movement. But one of them would be the goddess worship, the kind of bringing back ancient forms of worship and trying to rediscover what those people were into or to reinvent it. And I find that very intriguing, but again, it's kind of intriguing from afar, kind of like I find vampirism intriguing, you know, but I don't think I necessarily want to hang out with a bunch of vampires. I might be a little bit more comfortable around goddess worshippers, at least I'd like to think so, than vampires, but I haven't actually gone there. But our, you know, we had, of course, a baptism ceremony, a feigning, if you will, for our daughter, and that was a form of goddess worship, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We haven't, Jules hasn't been baptized. I mean, he's stumbled into the water a few times, but never in any kind of ceremonial context.
So you didn't have any kind of naming ceremony?
No. I mean, we just...
In some cultures of the world, they wait a while before they do this.
Right. Yeah,
because, you know, there's such a high infant mortality rate back in the day. You didn't really want to, you know, say signed, sealed, and delivered or whatever. Boom, here's a new human being, a new member of the community, until they were proven viable.
Right.
So anyway, that's neither here nor there. The point is that it's never too late to do such a thing. I found the ceremony that we did to be extremely rewarding, extremely meaningful to me, and I believe to the other people who were there. Obviously, Persephone is too young to remember it, but we did record it, so she'll be able to listen to it someday down the road, if she's still inclined. But to me, it was a really beautiful way of bringing together a small community of people, and the main message that you know, I tried to impart. There was, I want everybody here to kind of take an active interest in Persephone's life. You know, it's a community effort to raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so please think of her as kind of your child as well as ours. And so forth like that there.
Yeah.
It's kind of,
you know, it's funny. That was actually, I will say in deference to this ceremony that I witnessed this morning, that was actually the sort of the biggest deal of that baptism of this child was, you know, the pastor talking, actually took the child after he was baptized and sort of walked up and down the aisles and said, you know, this is a kid that you need to pay attention to essentially now, and help out and be part of that upbringing, and that's an important thing.
What we're so many of us are lacking these days is any sense of community. And if you can find that in the church, then I think that's pretty great. But I just have, you know, obviously a little bit of a problem with the fact that, you know, you may have very progressive-minded folks in the church there, but a lot of times they're married, so to speak, to an institution
mm-hmm.
which just has a lot of doctrine and so forth that's codified, and
yeah.
it's, you know, it's very clear and black and white, and they're kind of wedded to that,
mm-hmm.
and it creates some difficult problems. And so, yeah, I've had some really interesting dialogue with some, you know, of my friends in New Orleans who have very, they're very devout religious people, but they
mm-hmm.
have huge issues with the church.
Yeah.
With whatever church it is, you know, that might be mentioned.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these churches have been around for centuries, and they've got a lot of history behind them. The church I was raised in, of course, very, very kind of conservative in terms of their doctrine and their orthodoxy. You know, we don't get together with people who don't share our doctrine. And that's
mm-hmm.
an important part of their doctrine. Yeah, so it's really, I don't find it very, very helpful at all. But what was I saying? Oh, yeah, so I would wholeheartedly encourage you to think about cobbling together your own, you know, ceremony, something that means
yeah.
something to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you know, it's a good thought because I was, you know, Day and I got married in 2001 at the courthouse. Well, yeah, except the first time we got married at the courthouse here.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I saw the video. Yeah, I was there for the second time.
Right, exactly, and that was what I was going to say, is that it actually, you know, as we contemplated what we had just done, we realized that, you know, both of us wanted something a little bit more, you know, we'd gotten married in the eyes of the state, but we had not gotten married in the witness of our friends and the people that really matter to us. I mean, there were friends who were there, but there were about five of them, I think, four or five, six people. And we wanted to do something more, as a ceremony to sort of sanctify and make public this commitment to each other. And that's why we did that second wedding. You know, in that same sense, I can see the meaning beyond the... It's interesting because it's something I've struggled with actually for a long time, this thing about, you know, I don't get any of the Jesus stuff, any of the miracle stuff, any of the doctrinal stuff about church, and yet the community part of it is so big that I'm almost willing, but I'm not willing, but I'm almost willing to forgive these things that, you know, are so central to it that I just don't get and don't believe in, because it's, you know, the community aspect of it, you know, being a part of a community where, frankly, you know, I think a lot of it is that people are reminded every week, hey, pay attention to these people because these are your peeps.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I totally recognize that importance. You know, a Unitarian, I don't know, maybe I'm a communitarian.
Well, I would recommend you at
where's
least...
the church?
Yeah, I would recommend you at least sit in on one of their services and see how
yeah.
they strike you.
Yeah, it would be a long time coming, but yeah, exactly.
Anyway, we for the text of our ceremony, the baptism ceremony, we drew upon some neo-pagan, but mostly secular humanist stuff that I just found through some research.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of rewrote and developed our own little liturgy, if you will, that was pretty personal, but also, I mean, everything really I felt spoke to our values and what we hope for our daughter, looking forward. And I really felt like it was a moment where that really brought a bunch of people together. And it was really sweet, you know, it was really sweet. So I would recommend that to you, to Daylin, to everybody.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's something to consider and try to put together. And, if I thought that it would be a good way to convince you to come up to Montana, then even be all the better.
You never know. With your connections in the with the opera and everything like that, if being, five figures in debt, whatever, doesn't alienate you from that entire community, you could have somebody sing an aria or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
And usually, of course, there's some water involved, so you
right,
can't
exactly.
River.
We have a lot of water around Missoula.
Yeah. So there you go. You're practically ready.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this has been fun to talk to you once again. I guess this is the end of our first season.
Yeah, exactly. But unlike all those shitty television shows that other people have to pay cable fees to watch, this is free on the internet, and our next season won't start like 6 months from now. It'll be like next week.
A couple weeks from now. I'm hoping that our second season will begin with a bang, with a three-way discussion between you and me and Jenny B.
Yeah, maybe that should be the hallmark of our second season, is three-way conversations with other
those
people.
Rock stars.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. All right, so I will talk to you later. Say hi to all the folks, and have a good evening.
You too. Be swell.
Bye-bye.
Bye.